Welcome to another installment of Words of Great Encouragement from the Prince of Preachers. Three new meditations from the Scriptures, all in the theme of encouragement, taken and edited from the writings of Charles Haddon Spurgeon. Job, chapter 10, verse 2. Job said to God, "Let me know why you contend against me. Perhaps, O tried soul, the Lord is doing this to develop your graces. There are some of your graces which would never be discovered were it not for your trials. Do you not know that your faith never looks so grand in summer weather as it does in winter? Love is too often like a glowworm, showing very little light except it be in the midst of surrounding darkness. Hope itself is like a star, not to be seen in the sunshine of prosperity, but only to be discovered in the night of adversity. Afflictions are often the black setting in which God sets the jewels of his children's graces, to make them shine all the better. It was but a little while ago that you were on your knees saying, 'Lord, I fear that I have no faith. Let me know that I have faith.' Was this not really, though perhaps unconsciously, praying for trials? For how can you know that you have faith until your faith is exercised? Depend upon it, God often sends us trials that our graces may be discovered, and that we may be proven to possess them. Besides, it is not merely discovery. Real growth in grace is a result of sanctified trials. God often takes away our comforts and our privileges in order to make us better Christians. He trains his soldiers not in the tents of ease and luxury, but by turning them out and getting them used to forced marches and hard service. He makes them ford through streams and swim through rivers and climb mountains, and walk many a long mile with heavy knapsacks of sorrow on their backs. Well, Christian, may not this account for the troubles through which you are passing? Is not the Lord bringing out your graces and making them grow? Is not this the reason why he's contending with you? As the poet says, 'Trials make the promise sweet. Trials give new life to prayer. Trials bring me to his feet, lay me low, and keep me there.'" Now, add this to that. Isaiah chapter 48, verse 10. "I have chosen you in the furnace of affliction." Comfort yourself, tried believer, with this thought. God says, "I have chosen you in the furnace of affliction." Does not that word come like a soft shower and calm the fury of the flame? Yea, is it not a shield against which the heat has no power? Let affliction come. God has chosen me. Poverty, you may stride at my door, but God is in the house already, and he has chosen me. Sickness, you may intrude, but I have a medicine at the ready. God has chosen me. Whatever befalls me in this vale of tears, I know that he has chosen me. If, believer, you require still greater comfort, remember that you have the Son of Man with you in the furnace. In that silent chamber of yours, there sits by your side one whom you have not seen, but whom you love. And oftentimes, when you know it not, he makes your bed in your affliction and smooths your pillow for you. You may be in poverty, but in that lovely little house of yours, the Lord of life and glory is a frequent visitor. He loves to come even into desolate places that he may visit you. Your friend sticks closely to you, though you cannot see him. But you may feel the pressure of his hands. Do you not hear his voice? Even in the valley of the shadow of death, he says, "Fear not, I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God." Remember that noble speech of Caesar, "Fear not, you carry Caesar and all his fortune." Well, fear not, Christian. Jesus is with you. In all your fiery trials, his presence is both your comfort and safety. He will never leave one whom he has chosen for his own. Fear not, for I am with you, is his sure word of promise to his chosen ones in the furnace of affliction. Will you not then take fast hold of Christ and say, as the poet, "Through floods and flames, if Jesus lead, I'll follow where he goes"? And now that we have turned our thoughts to Jesus, let us do the best thing we can. Give thought to his love. For Ephesians 3:19 tells us, "The love of Christ surpasses knowledge." The love of Christ in its sweetness, in its fullness, in its greatness, in its faithfulness, passes all human comprehension. Where shall language be found which shall describe his matchless, his unparalleled love towards the children of men? Oh, it is so vast and boundless that as the swallow merely skims the water and dives not into its depths, so all descriptive words only touch the surface of the love of Jesus, while depths immeasurable lie beneath. Well might the poet say, "O love, thou bottomless abyss," for this love of Christ is indeed measureless and bottomless. None can attain unto it. Before we can have any right idea of the love of Jesus, we must understand his previous glory in its height of majesty, and his incarnation upon the earth in all its depths of shame. But who can tell us the majesty of Christ? When he was enthroned in the highest heavens, he was very God of very God. By him were the heavens made, and all the hosts thereof. His own almighty arm upheld the heavenly bodies. The praises of cherubim and seraphim perpetually surrounded him. The full chorus of the hallelujahs of the universe unceasingly flowed to the foot of his throne. He reigned supreme above all his creatures, God over all, blessed forever. Who can tell his height of glory then? And who, on the other hand, can tell how low he descended? Well, to be a man is something. To be a man of sorrows was far more. To bleed and die and suffer, these were much for him who was the Son of God. But to suffer such unparalleled agony, to endure a death of shame and desertion by his Father, this is a depth of condescending love which the most inspired mind must utterly fail to fathom. Herein is love, and truly it is love that passes knowledge. Oh, let his love fill our hearts with adoring gratitude and lead us to practical manifestations of its power.
When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss, and pour contempt on all my pride. Forbid it, Lord, that I should boast, save in the death of Christ my God. All the vain things that charm me most, I sacrifice them to his blood. See from his head, his hands, his feet, sorrow and love flow mingled down. Did such love and sorrow meet, or thorns compose so rich a crown? Were the whole realm of nature mine, that were a present far too small. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life.